I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about students who are homeless. We're going to talk about what going to school when they don't feel secure in their housing does to young people. We're going to talk about how many homeless students we have in Indianapolis and Indiana. And we're going to talk about what we can do about it. My guests are Carol Craig of the Education Committee of the Indianapolis NAACP and Laura Alvarado of Indy School on Wheels. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about students who are homeless. If you'd like to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Laura Alvarado, who is the Vice President of Programs and Community Outreach for Indy School on Wheels, and Carol Craig, who is a member of the Education Committee of the Indianapolis NAACP. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's good to have you both here. Well, we probably ought to talk, you know, since we are going to, I realize homelessness is one of those subjects that it's difficult to talk about in isolation because there's so many other factors that touch it and that it touches. We probably ought to talk a bit about the scope of the challenge here. You know, there are numbers now about how many students just in Indianapolis are displaced. Laura, could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. I always kind of like to refer to a number that was brought through the Indiana Department of Education that stated in 2012 and 2013, during that school year, we had just over 5,200 students experiencing homelessness. And what that means is that could be those students that are living in homeless shelters, transitional housing. It can also mean those students that are hidden homeless. And I think that's oftentimes a population that people don't really know about. Those can be students and families that may be doubled up in housing due to economic loss, due to job loss, whatever the case may be. And oftentimes they truly are hidden, living in maybe apartment complex with extended family for a little while and then unable to stay there and then move on to another residence, a family member, friend, or whomever. So those students can be very transient. And that's a large population that we at School on Wheels are seeing here in our city and also trying to accommodate as well.
Probably before we go on, talk about what School on Wheels is, too, so people understand.
Sure. No, thank you. Yeah. Our mission at School on Wheels is to provide one-on-one tutoring and educational support to youth experiencing homelessness. And the way that we are able to do that is we partner with 13 different locations around the city and recruit about 400 volunteers each year to go out and tutor alongside our students, our youth. And our kids can be in emergency shelter locations. We partner with transitional housing. That can be up to 2 years type stay for families, as well as we also partner with 4 different public schools here in the city. So our goal is to make sure that our kids feel safe, have the educational support that they need while they're experiencing homelessness, and maybe they can maintain those good grades that they've had, or we can help them increase those grades and support them, support their confidence to go to school every day.
Carol, how accurate do you think those numbers are of even the hidden homeless? Because one of the things that obviously is a challenge with homelessness is often people are embarrassed or ashamed to acknowledge that their living circumstances when they don't have home. So there's you know, a widespread perception that the problem is significantly underreported.
Yes, I'm sure that's the case. First of all, I think we're so fortunate here to have Schools on Wheels with all of the great work they've been doing over the years and with so many volunteers. I'm sure when they indicate the number, they have taken that into account. But one thing I found as an educator that's so challenging, based just on what you were saying, would be those teenagers. Mm-hmm. I worked most of my career with middle school and high school students. And usually that was one thing that we always didn't have necessarily a good handle on it because of the students being embarrassed and the families being embarrassed. But because I was a dean of students for quite a few years and a counselor, over a period of time, I would get very close to the students. And they would share with me when I would talk about, you know, whom should I contact if you need something, where are you, that kind of thing. That's when they would start to reveal that, well, this week or last night I was staying with my aunt, but I may not be staying with her next week. That kind of conversation would lead me and others to realize that we need to see if we can provide more support. But it is a very, very challenging area, especially with those that are the hidden homeless. And as I said, with so many of our teens now, and I even saw this, John, as far back probably as 25 years ago, that many of our teens were on their own. Because of the high poverty in our community, and they were fending for themselves, and it was just so challenging to be able to get a handle on it.
What does being homeless do to a young person? I mean, what are some of the effects? Carol, I'm going to start with you, but I also want Laura's thoughts on that.
Yes, the challenge for the children is their identity, who they are. Not only the safety that Laura mentioned, but it's their feeling of who they are and whether or not they're being protected. Because young people of any age are so vulnerable in being sure that they are in a protective setting, that someone loves them and that they're cared for. And many times when the very people that they love the most have a challenge of caring for them, then that makes the young people a lot of times have self-doubts about whether or not they were even contributing to the challenge. And so it affects that. And then when you have the rigor of the academic setting, and because the academic setting actually goes so fast during a day and during a term, it makes it very challenging for the young people to even do that necessary reflection that we all have to do to be sure that we're okay inside. So many times with young people, then it may be exhibited in ways that others might describe it as inappropriate behavior. Of course, you've got the other end where the students are very reserved and quiet and inward. And many times that's the most harmful because no one is paying attention. So it's the emotional side, it's the academic side, as well as the physical side.
Laura.
Absolutely. We see this all the time with our students that I always like to use this example. We've had families in our program, and maybe let's take, we have five siblings, and all have experienced the same experience of being homeless, maybe all of those experiences of maybe living in shelters or living doubled up, all the same. But each one of those children may exhibit the trauma that they've experienced through all of these experiences a little bit differently. We've had students that have had behavior issues in one family, one student in particular. Just that was the way he coped with being homeless and seeing what he had seen. We had another one of his siblings who was a straight-A student who put her energy into school. That was her avenue. We've had another child in that same family who might be shutting down. So each child responds differently to their experience. And just like Carol mentioned, it can be very difficult to try and then say, okay, what does this child need? What are they telling us? Those silent indicators that how can we best reach this child? And sometimes it takes time, and it takes that person who can be there, who they know, who they get to know, and they can start to trust that individual and say, okay, this person is saying what they say they're going to do, and they're showing up every week, and they're doing what I need. And that's where that window opens, that window of trust, I like to say. But it just depends for every child. It's different. And I would say academically, we've seen students who continue to get amazing grades during this experience, and other students who may have been passed into different grade levels who just are afraid to speak up and tell their teacher they just don't understand the material. And oftentimes when a child may change a school, it takes about 3 to 4 times to recover academically. So if we have some students that have been with us and maybe changed schools 3 times in a year, we're looking at some significant academic loss. And for that child to be secure and feel confident to speak up and say, I just don't understand the material, can be quite a struggle. So we see that all the time with School on Wheels, and that's what we hope to do, is come in and be that stable force, be that positive reinforcement to every one of our students that comes through our program and say, you know what, this experience doesn't define you. You can really become anything you want to be. Let's show you how to use education to get there.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about students who are homeless here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Carol, something you said resonated with me, because it sounds like, among other things, one of the effects we have here, and we can talk about the academic performances and break down some of the numbers, is, well, I can't think of any other way to phrase it, is a kind of loss of trust. You know, if you can't sort of trust people to care for you, it makes trusting almost anything else that much more difficult among young people. How do you go about, and it sounds like you have had a lot of those kinds of conversations in your time as an educator, how do you go about restoring that trust?
Yes, that is so critical and so important. Over the years, what I found is, and it's of course what we know as educators and in research, all of us, is that the most important factor in life, period, is relationships. And Laura touched on that. People and children especially will gravitate toward relationships. So when they find that there is an adult that has asked the question, how are you today? Sometimes it just takes, how are you today? And being perceptive enough to read the body language of the child, to look them in the eye, and they do the same and see, here's someone that cares. I have found, John, that actually that trust can come even faster sometimes than you would believe, because of the ability of kids to be resilient if there is a relationship. And if that relationship is one, as you mentioned, is stable and stays with the child, because they will test that. Mm-hmm. But that trust can come back if the school environment makes that a high priority.
And I hope I'm not interrupting, but it also occurs to me, just the way, it may be something, and I'd like both of your thoughts on this, that it may be a question of something that they're really hungry for, too, that they're desperate for. That kind of, Carol, you're nodding your head, so I'm going with you first, but I do want to give Laura a shot at that one,
yes,
too.
They're desperate, because when they lose that protection of the safe home, quote, whatever that might have been, then that sends a whole wave of nervousness through the whole emotional system of an adult or a child. And so that's why that trust, is they're just hungry for it, and they will exhibit that hunger in different ways also, as Laura mentioned. So sometimes it's an overt reaching out, but many times it shows up in other ways that adults have to be trained many times to look for those signs so that we can come quickly to their aid.
Laura, you got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I would definitely say the same thing. I think one of those things that we always talk to our staff about and our volunteers is that providing that positivity, that can go a long way with our kids in terms of building that trust. And it is such an important piece of what we do in terms of building the relationship with the student, and not just in terms of school on wheels, just saying, okay, we're here for the academic side, because it impacts every part of the child to be there.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about students who are homeless here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Laura Alvarado of Indy School on Wheels and Carol Craig of the Indianapolis NAACP. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about students who are homeless. My guests are Laura Alvarado, who is the vice president of programs and community outreach for Indy School on Wheels, and Carol Craig, who's with the education committee for the Indianapolis NAACP. And Carol sounds like also a career educator yourself, so you speak with authority on these questions. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can find us on social media. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can do what a listener named Zach has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Zach, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you.
Certainly.
I am lucky as a gay man that I haven't had this occur to me, but one of the big things for people in my community are young teens being kicked out of their households for their sexual orientation and ending up having to find shelters or friends or extended family to rely on. And I wasn't sure if the guests had any numbers or information on that and what additional services they may provide to those who are not only homeless, but now no longer have a family to support them either.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Zach.
Yeah, I can comment on that. There are some really great programs here in our city, one of which is called Stopover. They work to provide young teens housing as well as resources to become stable. There's also another wonderful organization called Outreach, Inc., and they do a lot of wonderful street outreach, trying to make sure as they're out on the streets that they're interacting with teens that are out there and, like you've mentioned, now are experiencing homelessness but also have a loss of family. And what I would like to say about both of those organizations is I think in many different ways they provide that family, a community of support around those teenagers. So I would encourage you, if you know anyone, to reach out to those organizations. I do think they do a tremendous job here in our city.
Carol, I saw you nodding while Zach was telling
yes,
the story. Is that a more common situation than one would think?
It's becoming much more common because we have not been as sensitive as we need to as a community with our LGBT population and our other young people that have experienced challenges at home where, let's say, the family doesn't know how to deal with it and needs more support. And I'd like to see us as a community talk about that more because it is such a reality, as a caller indicated, and it's where the family doesn't know how to respond. One of the things that we try to encourage, too, for families to do is to contact the school social workers more than they do. Many times they're not aware that the social workers have had tremendous training in all of these areas, and they're familiar with the organizations. I was familiar with Stopover years ago and even went with one family to Stopover to help them feel more comfortable. But we do have those resources in the community. But again, if families would just contact the school and let the social worker know that there's a situation at home, they're very uncomfortable with it, perhaps they've been brought up with certain ideas about the situation, and they don't know how to respond other than in a negative way, and they just need help and assistance. The other situation we find, John, into the caller, too, is that we have many teens that when they experience troubles, whether it's delinquent by the criminal law or whether it's just severe misbehavior, the family doesn't know how to respond. So I had many times where the teenagers, usually their teens, would say they've been put out of the house because of misbehavior. And again, the family doesn't know how to respond. So in those cases, the same, if they would just reach out to school personnel, even if it's the principal or the counselor, we're all trained to provide services or connection to those services that were just mentioned by Laura.
Do we have a, you know, and this raises a larger question, do we have a kind of a, is there any kind of demographic profile of who the homeless student population is in our community or nationally, or is it, does it just cut across all sorts of lines and it's sort of impossible to, you know, to even get a snapshot of what a homeless student might look like?
Well, there is something that we do in Indianapolis called the homeless count. Here, it's usually in the end of January, and as a city, all major cities really do this to be able to understand who is homeless here in Indy, and then also understand the reasons why. I always look towards that count to give a reference. Obviously, it's one night, one day that we're looking at those numbers. But, you know, in this last year, I believe we had over 1,600 just in one night that were reported through shelters and through street outreach as being homeless. Now, when you look at also, we also have a McKinney-Vento liaison who is someone, it can be the social worker, it can be a whole number of different folks in the school system who take on that role that are there to provide what Carol mentioned, those resources and support for youth. But it's hard to kind of quantify the age or say that we have this certain percentage because it's ebb and flows. And we have students that will be in one-time homelessness. That means crisis mode. They're in living in a homeless shelter. And then that shelter helps find that stable housing within 30, 90 days to those families that we can see multiple times in various homeless shelter settings that may be homeless for a number of months or years. So that number and that average can really change. I can say with School on Wheels, our average age of student is 9 that we are able to serve.
We are talking about students who are homeless. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. David, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on again and to hear about this topic. It's one that's near and dear to my heart because, and I'll, this is my comment, the caring piece that you that the ladies were talking about is probably the most consequential piece because many times, in most cases, even as a child myself growing up in a very bad neighborhood that I grew up in, no one cared. Even when I got to school, my parents sent me to Catholic school, and the counselors there didn't care. They could care less about me. And because they didn't care, I typically acted out. Now, I wasn't specifically homeless, but I had many friends who were, and their specific issue was that no one cared. And since no one cared, they did whatever they wanted to do. And that is the key, that there are caring people. One of the things I wanted to ask about, and just after that comment, and just quickly, many of the issues that you find with homeless kids are also the same issues that children have who have issues at school or are dropouts. Do you guys have any connections with beyond the counseling or with other groups or with any other groups that connect the kinds of services that you have and the kind of caring that you offer to kids not even that may not necessarily be homeless but have the same issues and problems that arise from no one caring about them? Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, David. Carol, I'm going to throw that one your way first.
Well, I appreciate the caller sharing that because that, again, is so real. And what we have happen many times, and it's not talked about, and that is when we don't have a real sensitivity to diversity and the issues surrounding that, so that many times we have students of color that are in a predominantly white environment, and in our state, we only have 3% teachers of color. And many times the educators, who are very well-meaning, don't realize that the students who are different from them are looking for more relationship across cultures. And because it's expressed in different ways, the student may interpret this as the adults not caring, just as the caller did. And the adults, if you were to question them, probably they're looking for a different way of response. For example, many times in the European American culture, they're looking for the young people to express a need. In the Black community, our culture says that you will ask me and you will talk to me and discover my need. So it's a cultural misunderstanding and a lack of cultural awareness of the need of the child. And that happens to many of our students. Also, the agenda that we pay attention to in schools now is driven, unfortunately, by a lot of political movement that doesn't emphasize who are our children out here who are not experiencing success. Who are they? What do they need that we haven't found? I think if we were to change the agenda so that we focus on the child rather than the structures and the politics, because it has impacted the children in a negative way.
This question, you know, the David, and I've been thinking about it ever since he mentioned it. We tend to think with a lot of these issues that it affects the individual, but he's making a point here that it, you know, his group of friends were affected.
Yeah,
It has this almost distributive effect out there. I'd like to talk a little bit about that, and maybe also, you know, we've done shows in the past on adverse childhood experiences. The acronym there is, I think, particularly inappropriate. They call them ACEs, when in fact it's not a superlative. It's something. So I'd like to talk a little bit first about the distributive effect, how this affects people who are around these students who are in this situation, and what some of the lingering impact is for both the students who are homeless and those who care about them. Laura, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, I think I'd like to say to that caller, too, I think he brought up such an amazing point that Carol touched on, is that our teachers do an amazing job. They're working with so many students. The expectation on our teachers now are probably the greatest we've ever seen.
That's right.
And they are expected to obviously have our students, have all students, no matter what their background, achieve certain scores, achieve state standards that need to be taught in a short period of time. I see it with my own child, who's in kindergarten right now, such a different kindergarten than my older child, my second grader. And the difference in what I've seen in terms of the volunteering, and it's interesting, if I go into a room, I think Carol could probably say the same, is that through our years of experience working with students, especially in high poverty, you can kind of see quickly, oftentimes, who is that student that may have some significant challenges, and how does that impact that whole classroom? And I would say it impacts not only the teacher, the classroom, the entire school, because now we have a teacher who is expected to be able to prove that her students are learning, and here are some major obstacles going on for maybe a handful of her students. Some, maybe more, that she doesn't even know about, or he doesn't, I shouldn't just say she, I should say he, might not even know about. And so you have almost this community in the classroom now of trying to understand, okay, I have these expectations, I have to have the same expectations for all my students, but now I have to create different paths. I like to say that there's different paths that are created to get each student to that expectation. And it can be really challenging. One, because if we have, let's say, 30 students in a classroom and one teacher, maybe an aide that comes in once a week, twice a week, if they're part-time. Carol's shaking her head, not even once a week. Yeah. That now we are trying to navigate. Every single child in that classroom is trying to get ahead. And so now how does that teacher make sure that all 30 of those students get where they need to go with all of these different obstacles? So I would say one thing, I know I've kind of taken this question elsewhere, but in our education system, I feel like we often are putting teachers out there into the schools without the proper education of their community and where they are and where these students are coming from. And so our teachers can be struggling, and we need to be supportive not only of our students and their families, but also the teachers in the classroom, and say, how can we as a full community be there to support you, provide different workshops or educational materials that can assist you, because that impacts the whole school community as a whole.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about students who are homeless here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. We have a tweet from Indiana Friends Committee on Legislation that says, a caller brought up the fact that many homeless youths believe no one cares about them. What can we do to change this? Carol, I'll start with you on that one.
Thank you. There are several things I'd like to see happen, and many of my professional friends have talked about the same thing. We need more social workers and counselors in our school. We have a terrible ratio in Indiana. I believe it's 500-1 mm-hmm. on the counseling staff, and that's absolutely ridiculous when you think about being able to serve students well. And the social worker role is so important. Then another thing that is much deeper, and as Laura talked about the teacher and 30 students, in the high schools and the middle schools now, the teachers are teaching six classes as opposed to five mm-hmm. what we had years ago. So that means you multiply 6 times 35, mm-hmm. and the teachers are responsible for that many students. So we are not aligning ourselves with the needs of education today. We're still back in an old factory model of how we try to deliver services rather than serve children. In the past, with the issues that the caller was talking about, we would stop a period and just talk to the students like they were family. And now the teachers are so pressed for time in staying with the pacing guide to meet the standards that they're not able to do that. So there needs to be legislation to really address the school day and what we're doing to the whole education setting if we're truly going to meet the needs of our students.
Laura.
Yeah, you know, I met with a principal about 6 months ago over on the west side, and she started out a conversation. We were considering a partnership, and I thought it was so interesting. She was looking at her calendar, January through May, and she said, you know what? We have to be able to teach to these tests from January through May, and I'm working with students in high poverty. I'm working with students that are experiencing homelessness. I'm working with students that are displaced right now, and she was talking about all of these issues that are affecting her and her school and trying to make the grade. So just like Carol mentioned, I think the expectations are becoming unrealistic for many of our schools around the city who are serving a high population to be able to, I'm not saying they can't do it, they're doing an amazing job, mm-hmm. but what I'm saying is that we're trying to put all of these efforts and saying teachers and schools solve the problem when I like to say, look at some of these schools that are looking at community partners to bring in and bring in so many throughout the school year.
We are talking about students who are homeless here on No Limits. My guests are Laura Alvarado, who is Vice President of Programs and Community Outreach for Indy School on Wheels, and Carol Craig, who is with the Indianapolis NAACP Education Committee. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about students who are homeless here on No Limits. My guests are Laura Alvarado, who is vice president of programs and community outreach for Indy School on Wheels, and Carol Craig, who is with the education committee for the Indianapolis NAACP and is a career educator herself. We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Gary who says he is looking at developing a housing subsidy scholarship for non-traditional college students and would love to hear about potential organizations who serve this population. I hear the biggest concern may be K through 12. However, a successful high school graduate may need a place to go next. I mean, is this a problem that ends, obviously, with high school? Laura.
And that is the big talk here in our community right now, or how are colleges accommodating students who maybe have experienced homelessness or are, you know, going to be first generation going to college. And I would say right now there's quite a bit of efforts going on in all of the universities. Ivy Tech, I know, has tried to accommodate through food pantries as well as emergency housing resources to IUPUI that is looking at potential having a similar person like a McKinney-Vento liaison who would also work with students in the college setting. But I can tell you that I've had a couple calls over this last year from different high schools here in our city who have shared, you know, a student situation, lost housing, are on their own, needing to find emergency funds for housing just for the summer to be able to get that student through to the college setting. So I would say there's a huge need here in our city for that. And there's quite a bit of folks here that are trying to make sure that our kids who are going on to college don't drop out that first year. Because they might be for the first time filling out the forms or filling out the FAFSA for the first time and don't understand all of the language, whereas in their high school, they may have had a counselor or support system helping them walk through all of these applications. And so I would say that would be a huge need.
Is this problem getting better or worse now? I'll go to Carol first, but then I'd like to hear Laura's thoughts.
The challenge is greater because, in particular here in Indianapolis and Indiana, because poverty has increased. Mm-hmm. The challenge is greater also because we're trying to have more college graduates, mm-hmm. and the young people want to be college graduates. One of the things people don't realize is when you talk to young people, yes, they want to go to college and they want to complete college. We have a subcommittee with the NAACP Education Committee focused on increasing graduation rates for students of color. And one of the huge impediments has to do with their ability to sustain their living as they're going through college. The enrollments have increased significantly into college. But our challenge now is completion. Completion rates here in Indiana are extremely low. And one of the reasons for that has to do with the person that's contacted you. Many of them are the sole supporters. Many of them have children, recently married. They are trying to make a living for themselves, and they don't have housing. So all of those needs are absolutely critical if they're going to finish. So we need to have more support programs in place. We've been doing research across the country to see what helps that, and it's where the community has more supports in place to meet the needs of the students.
Well, and I know, you know, we've had folks on the show before who report, looking at the numbers, that you know, that somewhere around 22-23% of the state's children live in poverty.
Yeah.
You know, which means somewhere between 1 in 4 and 1 in 5
That's right.
Lives in in poverty. So this is a more, and what we see is, even though the jobs numbers, we got, you know, today we got notice that the jobless rate in Indiana actually dropped again.
That's right.
That employment is up, but we are seeing that the bottom end of the middle class is slipping away, that the jobs aren't buoying that that sector, you know, that obviously has to have an effect on, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, what kinds of programs should we have in place, Laura, to combat what is a pretty persistent and dangerous trend in our economic development right now?
Well, I can speak to a portion of that. I would say that we need to start bringing in colleges into our kindergarten classes. Folks that represent IUPUI, if we're looking in Indianapolis, different universities that can say, you know what, this is a path that you can follow. And I find oftentimes with our parents, when we're talking to them about finishing out high school for their children or, you know, the college career path, many of them have not always had the best educational experience themselves. So one of the big pieces, and it's something that is across the country happening and what we're doing with School on Wheels, is really targeting the entire family. And I know Carol can speak to this, too, in terms of the school settings. Many of the schools are trying to accommodate that and bring in educational resources for parents so that it's not such a abstract concept that their child is going could go to college. And so many of our parents say to us, you know, I didn't have this great experience, but I want more for my child. How can I, you know, help him or her achieve that? And I think it's just we have to start earlier in the school setting by bringing in these different representatives, but also taking our kids out to into the college campuses and saying, this is a college. This is a place where you can achieve your dreams. Let's talk about the different opportunities that are here. I used to bring students out to the art school down here at Heron and that were interested in the arts. And it was amazing their first time walking into that school. It's really powerful to see their face say, oh, my God, I could be here one day. And so I think that's an important piece that we have to start integrating into our school settings as well as bringing in the colleges a little bit more. So
we are talking about students who are homeless here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can find us on social media. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can do what a listener named Bob has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Bob, welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon to you and your guest. I would like to first of all say a comment that your guest made earlier about the teachers also needing the support as well, because, and that may be something you may want to have a program about one day or so, because of the fact that, you know, it's hard to really assist that child or that teenager if that parent, I mean, if that teacher is needing some kind of mental and financial support as well. Because let's face it, you know, going into the teaching profession is not easy these days when you have the administrations coming at you, you have the parents coming at you, and you have the child that's coming at you, that they may have issues of being homeless or some kind of mental debilitation. And then what you do is they come to the teacher, and the teacher, they're having some issues as well. I don't know if you ever watched the program Welcome Back, Carter, or if you ever saw that, but remember, he was a teacher at one time dealing with high school students, and he had to work at two jobs because he financially wasn't making it.
Yeah.
So my question is to you and your guest, what programs or what things are I would say institution out there to or who's out there supporting the teacher as well to keep them encouraged so that when they have issues like this dealing with a child or a teenager that's homeless, to accommodate them? Because I've ran into situations where I had teachers where they had to have a child stay in their home or a teenager stay in their home, but really they financially weren't able to really accommodate them.
Let me throw that one to Carol. Thanks very much for the call, Bob, and for the
You're
questions.
Welcome.
Thank you for that question. And that is a complete show into itself, because all of the concerns that were mentioned are so real. And it actually made me think of several situations. I was a principal for 9 years. One of the things in the Indianapolis Public Schools, and I'm not sure how many school districts have that, but we had an employee assistance program. And that employee assistance program was open to the teachers, where they could share confidential information, receive counseling, talk about assistance they needed, whether it was financial or whatever a situation would be, just the same as any other business with that employee assistance program. Because people don't realize that, yes, the teachers are under tremendous stress, much more so than in the past, and teachers have their own family situations that they're working with. And then when you have so many students that you're trying to work with and serve, it is overwhelming. So my recommendation is that more school districts have these types of programs, and then if some of that needs to be legislated, then that needs to be happening, because the school, the staff is under tremendous stress. And then the other thing that has to happen at the local school level is that the principal be trained and be sensitive to the teachers, so that all of the activities that are necessary for social activities, I know how much teachers appreciate just fun on the job like anyone else. And so trying to weave in those as much as they can and show appreciation. There's Teacher Appreciation Day, but that's not enough. It has to be a lot of appreciation for the teachers and the leaders. And I'm sure when the state comes out with these recommendations for the teacher shortage in Indiana, they will come upon some of those as recommendations.
We are starting to get a fair number of calls here, so I'm going to ask both listeners and guests to try to be concise, first in asking the question and then answering it, because we want to get as many people in as possible. Rosemary, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My comment is this. I am a retired principal from suburban Chicago area, just new to Indianapolis. The problems that you've been talking about today are, I think they're universal. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're worldwide, but certainly nationwide. The fact that everyone points to the schools just infuriates me, because, as you've mentioned, teachers are under so much pressure to do so many things that they didn't even go to school for. But mm-hmm. besides that, my comment is, in Indianapolis, or anywhere for that matter, I think that it has to be a community effort, not just the schools, not just an agency, but a total community effort to get these kids where they need to go. They're disenfranchised for so many reasons, so many circumstances. We all have stories beyond, as you educators know. What can we do to get a cohesive group of people together to help you help the kids?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Rosemary. I'm going to let Laura take that one first, but Carol, if you want to chime in.
I would absolutely agree, Rosemary. What you're saying is that we have this expectation, I wouldn't even just say Indianapolis, I would say nationwide, that our teachers are there to really fix everything, right? And that's an impossible task. And you know, I like to point to a lot of the schools that do utilize community partners to come in, but to be able to relieve teachers and help be resources maybe in the hallway to work with a student who's falling behind. Those are wonderful ways individuals in our community can volunteer. But I would say, as a community, we have to, one, first understand homelessness exists, right? And I can point to a meeting I was at recently where I had an individual raise his hand and said, "Are you telling me that there are homeless kids in Washington Township?" And I said, "There are homeless kids in every township throughout Marion County. There are homeless youth in rural areas. There are homeless kids everywhere." So we have to, I think, as a community, continue to spread the word that homelessness exists. I feel like for so long we have put that kind of a way in the corner, right? We've kind of said that, you know, that's a negatively charged word when people will say someone is homeless. But at the same time, we also have to understand it and really work in terms of education in advocacy groups to teach people that homelessness exists across all socioeconomic backgrounds, that you can have an individual, and I point to this as a social worker told me, from Carmel, who are experiencing homelessness, to someone in our inner city. So that idea, I think, is a big thing that we have to continue to communicate and work as a community to address and continue to talk about it. I would say in this last 2 years since I've lived in Indianapolis, I feel like we have drawn more attention to homelessness than when I first came here in 2004. And I think there's a momentum. So if you are an educator who's just moved here, I would encourage you to connect with individuals like Carol or different societies, groups, community service groups that are here in Indianapolis to work with them and continue to spread that message of what you just talked about in terms of the overwhelming tasks that our teachers have. And one, we have to break down those barriers of what homeless youth are experiencing, what those obstacles look like, and what does a homeless child in Indianapolis look like? Well, that child looks like just about anyone.
And that is actually a cue here, real quickly, before we get off the air. If people want to volunteer to help on this, to help with either Indy School on Wheels or the NAACP, how should they go about doing that? How should they reach out to you? Carol, you go first.
Thank you. The NAACP office can be accessed at 317-925-5127, Mondays through Thursday, 1 to 5. We're a nonprofit volunteer organization. And also, Community in Schools is a national model that's trying to move and get on ground here so we can share that information.
And do you have a URL, a website? Or
yes, Indy, I-N-D-Y, NAACP, .org.
And we certainly need more volunteers to be tutors for School on Wheels. You can learn a little bit more information by visiting our website, www.indysow.org. And I will say that for those who are looking to make a difference in a child's life, that we are 400 volunteers strong, but always looking for more individuals in our community to basically donate an hour of time once a week to change a life. I think it's very staggering to see what can happen when an individual who donates that hour a week can make that big difference, that positive difference on a child's life and turn things around. So we would love people to apply.
And that will have to be the last word for this program. This is not a subject, though, that we are going to drop. We will do future programs on this issue of homelessness and students. I'd like to thank my guests, Laura Alvarado and Carol Craig of Indy School on Wheels and the Indianapolis NAACP, respectively. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Certainly. And I'd invite our listeners to come back on Thursday when we're going to be talking with Guy Raz, the host of NPR's TED Radio Hour. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.